Good morning. Welcome to the coaches meeting presented by the Sleeper app. That's the coach. I'm Grant Conn. I totally forgot where I was for a second. I was in Orlando for a few days. I'm back on the West Coast. I'm completely jet lagged. I'm wearing sweatpants and a blazer inside, but that's, you know, that's how I do. Coach, you looking good. How you been?
Good, man. I'm getting through the day, man. It's Thursday, so I'll be ready to close out this week, man. I'm ready.
So you're having a good day?
Yeah, my day's been
how good. Incredibly selfish of you.
I know.
I don't understand how you can sit there with a smile on your face and enjoy your life when Eric Armstead feels disrespected by the 49ers.
That was the coldest segue. Okay.
How can you think about yourself at a time like this when Armstead feels disrespected? Now, of course, he has a new team. He's making a lot of money. Everything worked out for him, but he feels extremely disrespected by the 49ers.
What are you going to do? What are you going to do? He shouldn't feel disrespected. I think the Niners did what they had to do. Honestly, the motive of why he got jettisoned has nothing to do with really the crux of the real reason why. The motive is he wasn't worth the money that he was getting paid. They saw the deal that they gave him. Jed said, I'm not going to pay you flat salary rate unless you come up off some of this because we need you, but just not at this rate, depending on what you give us production-wise, right? The best ability is availability, and that's something that Eric Armstead has been struggling with over the past several years since he's been with the 49ers. And for him not to recognize that and make this seem as though that the Niners in some way did him dirty is a bit rich. Now, was it a little unceremonious how he left? Yes. It was a little abrupt. It was quick. But at the end of the day, you forced your hand. And the only reason why it was abrupt is because the Niners did you a solid by letting you know what their thought process was and gave you a chance to go out there and bet on yourself. So really, the only reason why he was gone as quick as he was is because he's the one that made the decision to leave and go bet on himself as fast as he did and not massage exactly what the Niners had asked him. Now, he put out a video, and we don't know exactly how much the Niners made that cut. That's out there. But at the same time, to make this a us versus them, friend versus foe situation, being 9 years into your career, coming into age 30 and having degenerative injuries such as plantar fasciitis, hey, bro, that's just, you got by the game. That's just what it is.
And I understand him feeling extremely disrespected. I feel like probably every athlete would in this position, but it doesn't mean he has to make a podcast about it and talk about it and then bleep out the numbers so that people listen to the podcast and give them more views and more ad revenue. It feels tone deaf.
Like, right.
Whose sympathy are you looking for? They offered you a lot, millions and millions of dollars to play football. Mm-hmm. And you didn't want it. You wanted a few more million dollars to play football for another team. So are Niner fans supposed to really feel sad? Like, you know what? I was going to have a really nice Thursday. Sun's out. It's been raining for 6 months. But mm-hmm. Eric Armstead feels disrespected. I'm going to think about Eric today. I'm going to take stock of my life.
You're a dick.
I'm sorry. It's like, who cares, man? You felt disrespected. They paid you $85 million
mm-hmm.
in 9 years for like 30 sacks and good run defense, man. Like, they don't owe you anything. You owe them some. If you wanted to be a Niner for life, someone that these fans would really revere for generations, like they do with, I don't know, Joe Staley or someone like that. Well, mm-hmm. you could have, I mean, that would have been a business decision. Take the pay cut. But you yeah. want to make the most money possible. You're in Jacksonville and embrace Duval County.
I believe we made this conversation. I think it was just you. Sometimes all my take conversations run together on me. But one thing that I feel like Eric possibly did was he just couldn't see the forest through the trees as far as his legacy is concerned. I mean, this is supposed to be a team that you were pushing to go get championships with. You leaving to go to the Jags all but says that you're done trying to win those championships. Mm-hmm. It's not happening. And mm-hmm. you know that for sure. So mm-hmm. you chose the bag over your legacy, quite honestly, because mm-hmm. 1 year off of 10 years being a vested employee for an organization, being a leader, it just is a little rich for being in the Man of the Year award, you know? So I just, you think that you would like to see a little bit more there, but it was just, it left more to be desired. And to be honest with you, he raised the discussion.
Yeah.
Right? Like, he was gone. He's out to Jacksonville. We all saw what he got paid. As a matter of fact, when this conversation came up to the Niners where they had carte blanche to let them know, to let us know exactly how they felt. They took their high road. They were classy about it. Said, you know what? I wanted to give them an opportunity to make himself the best bag that he can get. And he went out and proved that. It's just that your career is over. Get happy losing. It's over.
Yeah. I mean, he wanted to play for, I wasn't going to bring up the man of the year thing, but you did. And so I'm glad. So now I'll talk about that. It's like, he never won that award. He never won that award. He was nominated for it multiple times. He never won it. And now when he was, like he said, he had some decisions to make. Well, we all saw the decision he made. I'm not saying I necessarily would have made a different decision, but he took the money.
Yeah, that was, definitely took the money, and it let him know he chose his path. He chose his fate. Right. So coming back to posthumously, like, explain what happened. You know, look, this is why we love the chat. This is why we love this platform of content creation. You know why? Because you don't get a bully pulpit. People get to talk back. You don't get to just monologue. And what's awesome about that is that he put his platform on the same very platform in which we put, and you can watch, you could look at the response from the fans. You can see how people feel. And it's just like, I feel like the overarching feel is, I'm over it. Like, all right, Eric, sayonara, have a good one. So we'll see.
I think he was, I think he might've been surprised by the response, because look, Eric Armstead blocked me a few years ago on Twitter, but still, I've been following Eric Armstead for 9 years. He has a he actually does have a social media presence. And whenever he would go to Twitter with his grievances the last 9 years, and he had a lot of them, Niner fans would really support him. You know, I totally agree with you, Eric. Like, they, Niner fans were the ones saying, this guy is completely underrated. He's worth what he's getting paid. People don't understand about his run defense. And now that you left, what are you looking at?
I'm sorry, doing something for work.
Okay.
I'm sorry, talk. Yeah, sorry. Just keep talking. Sorry. I'm so sorry.
I forgot what I was talking about. I guess I forgot what I was talking about. Sorry. We can move on. I don't really have anything more I want to say about Eric Armstead. He's gone.
No, you were talking about Eric Armstead as far as him being the man of the year and how that displays itself in how his actions were leaving the team. Right. Basically saying that he didn't put his money where his mouth is, and that it kind of showed exactly where his thought process was when the rubber met the road. You know, he chose himself. The Niners put him in a position where he could have directly been.
Oh, what I wanted to say was the response he thought he was going to get. Like, if you watch the video, he kind of has that little grin that he has, like, I'm about to keep it real and I'm about to get everyone on my side. You know what I mean? It's like,
yeah.
No, you're like, not. All those people that had your back on Twitter for the last 9 years that said, look, Eric's right. He's not that sensitive. He's not that this. He's not that. He's great. Look at the responses to your video, man. Mm-hmm. Now. And that's what happens when you sell out. You sold out.
Mm-hmm.
The Niners weren't trying to get rid of you. They just wanted to adjust your salary because, frankly, they overpaid you the last couple of years. Fair is fair. And you sold out. So
now that's
so go
enjoy
Jacksonville.
That's a good point. Now,
I got it. I'm back.
Right. My thing is that he didn't get the response that he wanted. You know what I'm saying? And he was overpaid to begin with. And honestly, if you really look at it, the Niners did Eric a solid when they chose him over DeForest Buckner. They bet on him. They did. And for what it's worth, he didn't live up to his contract.
He didn't work out.
His contract.
They should have bet on Buckner.
Yeah, and they're trying to be nice about it. But it's like, all right, bro, we've kind of been doing this song and dance for long enough.
Right.
Maybe it's time you kind of like be a little bit pragmatic and give us a deal. Give us a home discount. And I feel like in a way, Eric kind of gaslit the Niners. It was like, what are you talking about? I'm worth $17 million.
Yeah.
I don't know exactly which. I don't care that I've been here 9 years. I'm going to go get my bag. So he went to go get paid.
Right. I get it. What does it mean? What means the most to him? His legacy with the franchise? He was going to be in that 10-year club. No, it's his bottom line, which makes him normal. But it also means don't come to Twitter looking for sympathy from anyone. Really, at this point.
Definitely. You can't come to Twitter looking for sympathy. But honestly, I don't think he came to Twitter looking for sympathy. I thought that he thought this was going to be a good shot in the arm for his platform. You know, he even blanked out how much money the Niners actually paid. It was supposed to be kind of like a cliffhanger, like a teaser in a sense. Yeah. And it really didn't have the response that he thought it was, because it's just like, go home, Roger. Go home.
Show me examples of athletes who are playing and simultaneously starting a podcasting career.
Draymond.
Draymond and Armstead.
Paul George. NBA guys are kind of like throwing you out the water, though. Well, JJ's retired. Jeff Teague is retired. The Knuckleheads are retired. All of the Smoke is retired.
Yep. It just feels like you got one foot in retirement once you started working on your podcast. And Draymond's kind of been playing like he's got one foot in retirement, considering he just got ejected last night. Armstead's been like partially retired the last 2 years, and he makes appearances here and there. I just feel like it's a bad look to be doing the podcast at the same time. It's like,
well,
what you do next?
Well, what it truthfully does is that,
like, I retired from my professional athlete career before starting my YouTube channel. I had to give it up. I had to hang up the cleats, but I did that.
I feel like this is my thing. I don't have a problem with it, Grant. I really don't. I was get off my lawn about it. I really was, like, players shouldn't be. But the facts are is that this is an actual skill. You actually do have to have the consistency to keep up with it. And you don't get to just grab the mic and turn on the camera when your narrative works. Sometimes you got to grab the mic and get on the camera when your narrative doesn't work, right? And that's where we see where, I mean, I'm just going to,
I just feel like
I'm going to say it. He's boring. He's boring.
Well, there is that.
Eric Armstead is boring, bro.
Yes, he is. If
he was charismatic, right, and actually had, like, depth to what he was saying instead of, hey, guys, you know, I had to bet on myself. The Niners offered me blank $1 million. Now I'm in Jacksonville. What do you want me to do? Ho, ho, ho. Green Giant. Like, what do you want me to do?
You have the option to listen to certain podcasts at 2x speed? He would be 4x. Yes.
Speed him up. Please. Speed him up. Yo, remember the Chappelle Show, the Chappelle Show skit, the wrap-up box? Wrap him up.
When they would bring him out to the podium. Up. His press conferences routinely be like 15 minutes, and he'd answer like 4 questions. Oh my god.
I smell the blood of an Englishman. Like, come on, Eric.
I had to make some decisions. Like, yes, we know the decision you made.
Guess what I had to do? Eric had to pick on himself. So Eric is in Jacksonville. Eric is the man of the year, but Eric is now the man of Florida. Now I'm here. It's like, wrap it up, B. Wrap it up.
Like, we were listening because you were on the team for 9 years. Now you're on Jacksonville, and we don't have to anymore. I'm sorry. Yeah. Anyway, wish him all the best, but disrespected extremely? Yeah, man. Yeah, bro. My heart breaks for you, dude.
And you know what? There are other guys who are actually that are, like, doing sports. They're pro sports players, and they're really good content creators, right? Like, I enjoy a little bit of Micah Parsons. It's not all.
That's true. Because Micah Parsons is a good example, because what I was thinking was, a lot of times with these athletes that start doing podcasts, and it feels like they're thinking about, well, I might retire soon, like the Kelce brothers. Like, it's time to transition. It's like, it's nothing wrong with that, but it kind of, it's like a window into their, like, where they're at.
They're very good. They're naturally drawn to it. They know what they're doing. They know how to have, like, depth of knowledge and talk. But it's just like with Eric, man, it's like, and then the pastels and just, like, everything is white and beige. And then, like, the old coming to America sexual chocolate mic. Get a real mic. I believe in children are the future. Teach them well and let them lead the way. Like, get a better mic. So it's just, I don't know.
It's like the Draymond Green Show without the personality or the excitement.
Yes.
Or the interesting things that Draymond says. Like, if you took out all of the good parts of the Draymond Green Show, then you'd have the Eric Armstead Show.
100%. 100%. Yeah.
So, I mean, so he's got to work on that. Yeah.
Yo, you know, second career, man, you know, get him some acting classes, something. Like, at least
he needs to call you.
Like, I like something. Like, lift your eyebrows. Get do something.
Yeah. Okay. Enough Eric Armstead. So I just got back from the owners' meetings. Jed York spoke at the NFL annual meetings, and he always shares a lot. I'll give him that. He always gives you a lot to sink your teeth into. And I asked him, Ryan Hensley gave me the question. Mm-hmm. Read him his quote from 10 years ago. Read him his quote from a few months ago. Ask him to explain the shift in thinking of the guy who would only raise Super Bowl banners to the guy who thinks losing in the NFC Championship game isn't mm-hmm. necessarily an unsuccessful season. So right. Jed heard the question. Jed answered at length multiple times mm-hmm. and just gave a long list of excuses for why he shouldn't be expected to be his uncle and why what he has accomplished is actually extremely successful. What did you think of all the various ways that Jed let himself off the hook?
I mean, Jed basically rolled up with a truck full of Newport 100s and said, ha ha, I'm rich, bitch. Pretty much. Like, yeah. Look, what do you guys mean winning and losing season? Let me break this down to you, a billionaire. So first of all, I own the franchise, all right? And we're in the Super Bowl, so you guys don't necessarily know how it means. The actual trophy, that's for you guys, the peasants, the people who want to talk about it in the bar or whatever bowling alley you frequent on the weekends. But me, however, I'm swimming in cash. And it's amazing. I found Kyle. We've gotten more money. I've actually taken over the team. I don't have my father horning in on me. And what I have to do right now is basically let you guys down lightly on the fact that this is a business. And as long as we make the playoffs, okay, and we're in the show, the only difference between the winner and a loser from the perspective of a billionaire is an extra 45 minutes in a parade. They get to stay at the end of the game for the ceremony, and they get their parade afterwards. Afterwards, fiscally, they get the same money. They get the same exposure, all right? And he is happy being in the circus.
You know what annoyed me, though, a little bit with his answer? He went straight to the salary cap.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Like, so he was explaining how it's okay, and they're successful, and they're a good business. But then there was a follow-up question basically saying, Eddie didn't really think about things like that. Mm-hmm. And he was like, well, Eddie didn't have a salary cap. Like, it right away, very defensive. When actually Eddie did have a salary cap in 1994, that's how much this is like a sore spot for Jed York. Eddie did have a salary cap in 94. First year of the cap.
Yes, he did.
He won the Super Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
So I mean, right away, Jed's wrong. But so he's trying to be like, well, you know, Eddie had an unfair advantage. Mm-hmm. Eddie had the best quarterback in the league. The second highest paid quarterback in the league was Joe's backup. If I could do these things, of course I would, because I'm Eddie the third, but I'm not allowed to. And so I'm doing the best that I can. And frankly, I'm doing a better job than Eddie, who just had an easy job.
Yeah, he doesn't have to deal with the actual throws of the real NFL. Nope. One of the things that he said, especially right after he answered your fire-ass question, which was, no, you can't be ashamed of a successful season, and our goal is to always win Super Bowls. So which is it, Jed? All right?
Yeah.
Is the goal is to win Super Bowls, then how can you, in fact, have a successful season? You're talking out of both sides of your mouth. Also, he says it's not a complete
season, and the goal was to compete for a Super Bowl.
Yo, exactly.
Right.
He also said it's not a complete failure if you do not win. Well, give us the wins. Tell us where we had all of the wins that we can't see, Jed, outside of the fact that the team is as successful and as viable and profitable as it's ever been. Outside of that, we're still stuck in limbo with what we actually want. So nobody, as far as the fan base, is walking away with saying, guys, come on, it wasn't that bad of a season. Everybody is completely galvanized into how we lost that game. One thing that he also said is that you can't say the season was a complete disgrace. You're gaslighting. And you're moving the goalpost, okay?
Yeah.
Nobody said that this season was a disgrace, okay? And if you keep always trying to put in straw man arguments with, well, the season wasn't horrible. Nobody said the season was horrible. We're talking about finishing a goal. I feel like those are moments where Jed likes to try to move the goalposts and kind of give a dog whistle to the fact that, dude, we're profitable. I'm making money. Like, what are you talking about? You know what I'm saying?
I'm not going to make changes to our operation. We're making money hand over fist. What do you want me to do? Like, we had a meeting. We told them we want to win the Super Bowl. Like, that's not going to change. But we wrote on a whiteboard, mission statement, win the Super Bowl. Like, we're serious.
I just think that – I think the biggest thing is that Jed – it's not the fact that we have a profitable organization and that's Jed's sole reason for being here, not winning a Super Bowl, but it's the fact when he comes out and gets caught in these weird moments. Like, look at the press conference that he had before the Super Bowl. He was trying to rewrite history with that entire press conference. He knew that we had a rough start, and on top of it, he had given Kyle an extension off of his own political situations that he was dealing with, and he was trying his best to run things smoothly along. He restructured older players in the beginning of the season to create room, and then throughout the season, we had to add more players to the defense just to make it through. Jed thought that the smoke cleared. Even when we struggled through the first two rounds of the playoffs, what did he do? He held court, sat up and talked about the origin story of everything, basically trying to rewrite history and give their own prognosis of what was going to happen in the future. He talked about exactly how Brock was acquired. He talked about exactly when Kyle Shanahan knew Brock was the guy. And then he made sure to make sure that the story was out there when Jimmy and Trey were both in the building. That's when the story gets told. Then he starts talking about, oh, well, this is what we regularly do in the draft. And usually we don't primarily do these things in free agency, but I'm the one who pushed Kyle to get CMC. He had a victory lap. He counted his eggs before they hatched, man. And that story would have been something that fans would have been lynched to for decades, for years. That would have been the original constitution of how it all started if we won. But now he's got egg on his face because we lost. So now you go back and that doesn't age over time well.
Okay, one more thing that he said at the owners' meetings that really stuck with me. He basically reduced Eddie to, well, Eddie won those championships because he had the best quarterback in the league and no salary cap. Mm-hmm. Okay, fine. And so he's saying, I don't have the best quarterback in the league. I do have a salary cap. And the fact that we've been able to come close, compete, be in the Super Bowl actually shows that they have the best organization in football. Did you not he really kind of put that together. Like, look, Kansas City has Mahomes, okay? But we have an organization and a team. It's like, dude, Kansas City has a better organization than you, okay? They have a better coach than you. They have a better defensive coordinator than you. They don't just have a better quarterback than you. He called himself a program, too, like it's college. You don't have anything. Mm-hmm. You have nothing. You have a team that hasn't finished the deal and is running out of time. And you might be able to retool and find a new way to compete, but you even admitted, he's like, we have a very good quarterback in Brock Purdy, but he's not Patrick Mahomes. Okay, so you haven't been able to beat Mahomes with Purdy making $900K, but you're going to give him $55 million a year, and now you're going to be able to beat this quarterback that you acknowledge is in a whole different stratosphere than yours? How does that work?
Kyle's going to distance himself. There's no way. Yeah. Kyle's not going to go down. Kyle's not going to go down with Brock. He's not going to go down with him. And I'm going to tell you, when the rubber meets the road, when it's time for Brock to get that money and Kyle's got to get rid of his toys and he's got to get rid of Debo. You can't pay him $28 million a year, and Trent's gone and George is on his way out. And it's going to make sense from the fan base to pay our quarterback. That's how you traditionally compensate the guy who you're galvanizing yourself around. But I don't see it. And I don't think the fans are going to let Kyle off the hook. Brock is enough. Not only is enough, but I'm predicting that Brock is going to get better. He's got a full year. I mean, it all plays, man. He came off of a UCL injury over the season, came in, didn't have an offseason, and had limited reps and came in and kept himself upright and actually had himself in the MVP discussion throughout the year. I know from watching football for a very long time, fans have a romanticity with quarterbacks, and it's hard to stomach a quarterback being thrown under the bus, especially one that you forced on us and made us fall in love with. It's going to be something to watch, I'm telling you.
Absolutely. Did he make any other excuses for why he hasn't won a Super Bowl? I think that was it. To his credit, he didn't make any more excuses than that. It's just that he said the lemonade stand thing, and I'll never get over it. It's like, you really won't. It doesn't seem like he's giving Eddie credit. Like, I mean, God, he had no salary cap and Joe Montana. Like, of course. Why did he win more Super Bowls? I'm over here. I got all these constraints, and look at what we've created. It's like, man, you need to look in the mirror.
Yeah. Yeah.
You haven't created anything.
You haven't done anything.
You've wasted opportunities. You wasted one with Harbaugh, and you're this close to wasting one with whoever you want to put at the face of this one.
Well, that's also, I'm tons of pushback on this, but I'm gonna say it anyway. Look, we've been like systematically groomed into like lowering our own standard with this regime,
yeah,
and this ownership. It used to be that Kyle brought us back to the glory in which we had before him. Now it morphed into, we can't do anything with Kyle because before Kyle, we were nothing. Now it's morphed into, as long as Kyle can just get a Super Bowl, we're good. Now it's almost morphed to, Kyle won't be fired if he doesn't miss the playoffs. It's slowly but surely devolving into something where, if you really step back and look at it, it's not a missed season. It's not blunders on one or two Super Bowls, and it's not even missing the opportunity to push for a window to get one Super Bowl. But if you look at the rosters that we've had for almost 8 years, especially since 2009, so you can at least say 6 years, I mean 2019 rather, so you can at least say 6 years, we're erring on the side of a missed opportunity at a dynasty.
Right.
It's not just one missed Super Bowl.
And I think, again, what's disheartening about what he said is, like, he could say that the goal is to win a Super Bowl, and he could say that they got to get over the hump, but he isn't saying that they have to do anything differently to achieve that goal. What he said was, to win a Super Bowl, you have to get to the Super Bowl, and the Niners are successful at that part of the goal. So what they're going to do is keep doing what they're doing, and eventually they'll get lucky. Something will break their way. Like, that's what he's saying. We have the organization. We got the program. We're doing everything even better than Kansas City, frankly. We just can't go back in time and draft Patrick Mahomes. So we just got to keep on keeping on. And eventually we'll win a Super Bowl, or we won't. But either way, that's such a primitive way to judge people's success and to, base a legacy. People who know ball understand that we are the gold standard in the NFL. And people that think that the Kansas City Chiefs are the gold standard are just really primitive. They just don't know. Like,
you're just not in. You're not informed.
I mean, ask Kyle Shanahan. He'll tell you.
Well, I'm not mad at their pride in the organization, but it's just, there's a lot that's going to happen. Adam Peters is not in the building anymore. We're going to see what John Lynch is going to do in the draft and thus far in the offseason to see if he's really hit. You know, John talked about free agency as if he loved literally every guy they got, and they got every guy they were supposed to. So we'll see, man. Things are always changing. And if you really want to look at the past couple of years, if there was ever a time for us to kind of close the book on this entire, like, saga, it was this past season. We really don't know the lingering effects of us losing this game, not taking advantage of this season. We still don't know.
We don't. And on that note, let's take a break to do some sleeper picks, because it's opening day for baseball. And I played that sport. Not well. I was a JV athlete at Bishop Elder High School. Good school.
Mm-hmm.
But let's put this opening day, baby. Giants, Logan Webb going against the Padres. You're a big baseball guy, I can tell, aren't you? You love.
Oh, huge. I am not a baseball guy.
Did you ever play Little League? No.
No. I played like backyard baseball, but I didn't backyard play no baseball. Like, I don't remember. I don't remember ever playing like organized baseball.
No. Well, I think not knowing anything about baseball might help us make these picks even more.
All right, let's go. Let's muck it up.
Logan Webb, 4.5 strikeouts for Logan Webb. I feel like that's attainable for a starting pitcher who's good. 4.5. I kind of like that action.
Let's go.
Let's go. 4.5.
Logan.
More.
Logan. He's a Webb Jim.
He's a
Logan Webb Jim.
He's a good pitcher. How about Manny? No, Matt Chapman. Matt Chapman, third baseman. Used to be with the A's.
Are you doing this from your phone?
Giants. What?
Are you doing this from your phone?
Yeah, doing it on my phone.
That's pretty slick.
It's pretty slick, right?
This is slick.
Staring the window. Like. It's an advertisement for Sleeper, but it's also an advertisement for whatever technology I'm using to do this.
Yeah, this is kind of slick.
Okay, Matt Chapman.
Mm-hmm.
How about strikeouts? 1.5. How about less?
I think
Matt Chapman can strike out less than 2 times today. Just cause.
Let's do it. Fatis.
I think that's a good one. Tatis. Combination blocked. Why? Okay. Well, I don't know why. How about this dude? No stolen bases for him.
He's gonna steal none.
He's not stealing any bases.
You're not stealing any bases.
No. Okay, one more.
The long arm of the baseball law is on you, kid.
This dude. Jorge, I don't know how to pronounce his last name. Solier. Will he total bases? Will he get on base today? Yeah, I believe it, man. I think he's getting on base, baby.
I talked to the guy the other day. He said bases are very, they're going to be able to get on top of.
They're going to get on. Logan Webb. So these are our picks. They're the right ones. If you want to, you want to make some picks. Use the QR code, the promo code. Get up to that $500.
You need like a little disclaimer to run across the bottom. Like these picks.
Pants has never won.
Yeah.
No, hold on. Let me submit the entry. You can see that. I'll show you my picks.
You gonna put your bread up?
Active.
Remember, you're live, dog.
One. I did it. These are my
$48.
Lost.
Uh-huh.
One.
How'd you win?
I kept it to 3. And
Wimby and Kyrie.
It was my dad's picks too. He was like Wimby. He was like Doncic. No. Wimby. No. Irv Kyrie. I like Kyrie. I think Kyrie could do that. That was it. So I guess my dad's the winner. This is just, I think, how many have I done?
This is real time advertising though.
This is good.
Like, he's letting you in on the back end. Like you're not only a client, you're the president. Like you just,
and I'm sure they would like to show, they would want me to show my wins. I just don't have many.
This
so
is hair working on it. Stuff right here.
But this is really a collaborative exercise so we can get better together. So thank you very much, Sleeper Picks. Let's take some super chats. Yaz Williams, the disrespect is that Armstead thought he was living up to that contract. Be real with yourself, man.
He wasn't. That's facts. He wasn't.
I mean, when he was told him that he was better than DeForest Buckner, and he believed it.
That's the problem. It's kind of like when you're just looking at him like, we created this monster.
They did.
You know what I'm saying?
They kept him over Buckner, and they couldn't redo the contract because that would be an admission that the Buckner trade was bad, but it's been like 4 years and no one cares anymore. So they're like, look, Armstead, we've weathered that PR hit. You got to take
it. And then if you really just look at the proof is in the pudding, look at what Buck is doing in Indy. He's killing.
Yeah, he's doing exactly what he did with the Niners.
Yeah, he's doing exactly what he did before he left here, 4 years later.
Tia Ingram says, I'm old school. Me personally, if you haven't won anything, why do you have a podcast? Your focus is not on the sport you are playing. I guess they don't make them like MJ or Kobe anymore. Their focus is ball.
Yeah, she's talking about all of the podcast guys.
I don't think it's the best look. I'm not telling people what to do. I'm a podcaster. Fine. Do what you want to do. And if you want to transition. Look, I mean, I wasn't complaining about Travis Kelce and Jason Kelce. Like they were.
Because they were good.
Yeah, they were good. But. It's not the best look if you're not winning championships. Fish and chips, Eddie and Dad, 5-time champs, York's 0-3. Facts, Jed. Yeah, but he had excuses. It wasn't his fault.
Mm-hmm.
Just before we go on, I just want to have a brief moment of silence for Eric Armstead, who feels disrespected. Okay, that was good. All right, let's talk Kyle. He was at the owners' meetings, and this is an interesting. The owners' meetings are interesting. It's basically two brief press conferences, not so brief, half hour, but informal press conferences early in the morning, and then a big reception. And the reception is kind of the main event, and it's not press conferences. It's like you put your phones away and you go and you mingle. And Vince Carter is there, and freaking like people are there that you wouldn't. Charles Woodson's there. All the coaches are there, and they're with their kids. You see them in a whole different way. Like they're not the face of the organization at that moment. They're just having a nice time. And I don't know. Kyle, that's not really Kyle's element. Kyle's element is like football. We are, the day-to-day stuff of the NFL. Mm-hmm. Seeing him with his hair down, I didn't see him. He wasn't really at the reception. I don't know if he made a brief appearance, but I never saw him let his hair down. And it brought up a question that you brought up this question. Maybe think of it again. Mm-hmm. What would these coaches do if they didn't have football? Like,
right.
I know Robert Saleh pretty well. I spent 20, 25 minutes talking to him because there's a normal person there, and he was at the reception, and it's so clear to me, if there wasn't football, he'd be on Wall Street, or he'd be the CEO of an organization. He'd be making a lot of money doing, he'd be an expert at something else.
Mm-hmm.
What would Kyle be doing if there was no football?
I really don't know. And that's really the issue. And that's kind of the crux of the premise of what would coaches be outside of football, because that's what makes you successful in football. I feel like there's lifers, there's people that have been in football, their entire families have been in football. But one of the reasons why they're there for so long is that they have other elements in their lives. And quite frankly, in their entire family's lives that kind of keep them grounded so they don't get washed up into the rigmarole of the season. I mean, the NFL is a beast. It will not stop, and it doesn't stop. It's not designed to. And if you don't have something outside of it, or if you're not grounded or rooted as a person outside of this stuff, then you're never really going to be able to keep yourself from being caught up while you're in it. And just for context, like, you know, we floated this idea and this narrative a couple of times, but just look at some of the head coaches around, and not as just coaches, but look at some of the men that are holding these positions, right? Like, you know, if John Harbaugh decided like, hey, one day, if John Harbaugh decided one day, you know what, guys, the city of Baltimore has pricked my heart, man. And I just, I see the issues here, and I'm going to open up a church, and I'm going to become a youth pastor and start doing youth outreach. People would be shocked. But nobody would shun at the idea of John Harbaugh character-wise taking on that profession. The same thing with coaches like Mike Vrabel. If Mike Vrabel decided, yo, you know what, guys, I've been here in Memphis. I've been in this city. I know these people. I want to run for the sheriff of this town, and I want to get into law enforcement and clean this town up. Nobody would bat an eye. We would be shocked that we'd be giving up the money. But if he followed his heart for who he is character-wise, what this man has shown us as a person for all of these years, everybody will be able to make that jump. Pete Carroll, the best motivational speaker waiting to happen. Andy Reid looks like your baker or your local plumber or your postman, right? There's guys all over the place. Mike Tomlin could run for mayor. He could be a politician. Bill Belichick, Marv Levy, and Brian Billick, some of the smartest men, not coaches, but some of the smartest men that you have ever heard speak and been around. And they would be walking the halls of some of the greatest colleges, institutions as professors to this day, if you know the type of men that these guys are. And just, I feel like in certain instances, you just have to ask yourself, outside of football, outside of being a boy genius with understanding play calling and sequencing and knowing you're having a full Rolodex of not only your career in football, but your father's career in football, what are you? What are you outside of the X's and O's? What type of characteristics about you shine through that supersede football? Where it's like, hey, Kyle does not like this. Kyle's not going to stand for this. This is what Kyle is into. These are the things. Like, who is the man? And I feel like in certain instances, when we're trying to win these tough games, when they're letting us play, they're kind of swallowing their whistles and tucking in their flags, how you operate your team in the most serious parts of games is a reflection on your effect on them as a man. And we all know being a leader is reflective upon the followers. It all runs downhill. And those are just some of the things that I was touching on before with Kyle, as far as who is he? How is he going to move forward with pivoting, doing something new once he gets it, once the season starts? We have guys that have come into the enclave like Brandon Staley and other coordinators that have come in. Is Kyle going to give up more room to let them be, to let them grow? So these are the things that we just want to ask where, you know, at first I feel like in a way this question was hard to ask because Kyle kind of had the tab of being the wonder kid, the new kid on the block, one of the youngest coaches to get hired. There's no need to asking who he is. We already know who he is. He's a young kid burgeoning, trying to do his best. Now that he's in his 40s, it's like, we need more. What are you? Who are you? How are you going to get grown men to follow you outside of the guys that grew up with you? And that's the vibe that I get from this team. It's not the fact that Kyle is an adult and he's running the team like a man over the team. Kyle grew up with these guys. They all were young together. They all were given a chance together, and they all became who they were, and they all got the same accolades together. So that's why they're so banded close to each other. That's why you have the Cabo clique, because he treats these guys like they're his peers, but he needs to step out of that. You can't party with your people, man. You cannot party with your people. And that's something that every boss knows across any industry. It's time.
Yeah, and it's like if Bill Walsh wouldn't have been nothing without football. He would have been extremely successful in whatever he chose. And I think that's, like you said, that might be an issue with Kyle and why he's not a champion. Like, can you excel at anything? Or can you excel at one thing? Are you the kind of guy who's driven and disciplined enough to be a success in something you didn't grow up around? Or do you have one skill that you take for granted? I don't even know. Like, that's the question for him.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. We can't answer that one. LuTube says, supporting both Grant and Coach for the dope content. Thanks so much, man. Appreciate it. Fish and chips. Lil Shanny got a camera in either of your rooms? I hope not, but you just never know.
He better not.
All right. This is a bonus topic. I don't know if some of you saw this, but the Chiefs, well, there's a new rule this year. Every team is allowed to have a 17th player on their practice squad who is an international player. The Niners have had an international player in their practice squad for a long time. Alfredo Gutierrez, the offensive tackle. The Chiefs just signed a guy, Reese Zammit, who is a famous rugby league player. And the idea is, I think, is clever. The idea is there are these new kickoff rules, and it's really different than anything any football player's ever done. It's a little bit more like rugby, what this new kickoff is going to look like. So maybe go get a rugby player and put him on your practice squad and have him be your kick returner. Might work. I think it's pretty clever, and if the Chiefs do it, I'm instantly interested. Maybe having an offensive tackle you're never ever going to elevate to the actual roster isn't the best use of this rule. Maybe they should get a returner, not Jarryd Hayne, but someone else. I'm just saying.
Well, I will tell you, it's very smart. It's what you call situational football, matchup football, understanding that you need to go ahead and get a guy specifically for the position. And it really is getting ahead of the curve. It's something that I feel like now where you used to get a bang for your buck, where, you know, you get a DB, you get a corner or a receiver that could be your receiver threat. I mean, be your return threat and actually hold a position on your team. I believe with the new rules, this may actually carve out an actual position as a kick returner in the league, right? Because it seems as though that the rule changes are making this a much more curated situation where specific skill sets are going to start being born out of this. So yeah, good on them for actually doing it. It is kind of funny that we lost our returner in Ray McLeod, and we've always struggled with it. So it's something that we may want to take heed to actually doing ourselves. But we'll see. I actually think that the new rules are interesting. Have you heard the proposed new rules for the 2-point conversions?
No, I haven't.
The 2-point? All right, so this is proposed, so it's not final. But the proposed rules for going for a 2-point not 2-point conversion, but an onside kick. So if you want to go onside, you can only go onside. You can only opt to do this within the last
in the 2 fourth minutes. Quarter.
Yes.
Yeah.
You can only opt to do this within the last 2 minutes of the game, but you get to get a one-off play, do or die, score from the 25-yard line.
Has that been passed?
It's been proposed. No, it's not been passed, but it's been proposed.
Yeah, they got to figure that out.
That's kind of dope, though. A sudden death play.
I like that. That would be dope. I like the idea of a 4th and 20 instead of an onside kick as well. Like just convert a 4th and 20.
Yeah,
that's what the Eagles proposed, and it didn't pass. But I thought it was clever, and I think they may pass something like that in the future. I don't think they want to change.
20-yard line, not the 25-yard line. Sorry.
So with the Chiefs signed this guy Reese Zammit. He's 23. He's from Wales. He's a real good rugby league player, and he ran a 4.43 at the NFL's International Player Pathway Pro Day last week. So, I mean, the Niners should be looking at stuff like that. Now that you have this brand new play.
Skill set, yeah.
I mean, the Niners were one of three teams that voted against it. And I think they don't want to have to think on their feet quickly. And the Chiefs are. So, I don't know. Round one, you've been looking at players. Who do you like the Niners to go after in round one?
Okay, so there's two scenarios for me. If we trade B.A., then I feel like BA will go for 17 to 25, that in that range, as far as what teams and what compensation that we could get for him. If we get that, if we go from 17 to 25, there's only two players, honestly, that I think that we should get. I think we should either get Amarius Mims or J.C. Latham. That's who we should get and go up and go get. I feel like getting one of those guys would lock away that position, and we have a guy in Amarius Mims and possibly JC that can switch over to the left side if and when, well, when Trent leaves the team. So that's what I would do if we traded for BA. If we traded BA, I would go up and go get a tackle. Now, if we didn't, I'm going best available at the position. If we're picking at 31, I don't want to go best available at the position for right tackle, because I feel as though that this is a very deep offensive line draft. I said this all offseason, go keep saying it. This is the deepest offensive line draft in the past 15 years. It's really that deep. And because of that, I feel like the Niners have like a welcome problem. They don't necessarily value the offensive line position. We know this, but they can kind of luck up because there's value in the areas where they usually go dumpster diving anyway, and they may get guys that they need. So you really don't need if you're willing to go to bat with the offensive line that we went to the Super Bowl with, then I don't think that you have to reinvent the wheel and go with this high price player. I mean, and that would only be to supplant Trent. Now, if we don't trade BA, and we pick at 31, I would say get the best safety available in Tyler Newbin out of Minnesota. I really like him. He's 6'1", 200 to 205 pounds. Not necessarily a fast guy, so he's not a burner, but he's twitchy. Good 4.6 speed, 4.4 speed, 4.6 to 4.5 speed. He's a hitter, instinctual. He has so much range. I was actually looking at a little bit of film with him with Jesse the other day. And he's a little meld of Jair and Huff. He's as physical as Huff, comes down, fits run gaps. He's very instinctual as Huff, but he has all of the ball hawking skills of Jair Brown. And just give them a bigger skill set. Give that kid a bigger frame, put him at 6'1", 205 pounds. And I think that we legitimately have our plug and play free safety if we go there. With Tyler Newbin. Now, if we don't go Tyler Newbin, I'd like to go Graham Barton. Also, Graham Barton would be highly ranked as one of the best center guard combos what we can have in there. And then we can have a natural position at center or guard coming into this season. So for the first round, if we trade up, go get our tackles, obviously. But if we don't, I would say stay in pat and go get the best safety in the draft, because that's what we need. We need value at that position, and getting the best at that position would be really good for us.
Yeah, one thing that's interesting to note with the Niners is how much they don't want to play, you know, rookies. Mm-hmm. It's really not their first choice. Even with Jair Brown, who was really good last year, they kept him on the bench for a while. Even with Brock Purdy, who they knew was the best quarterback on the roster like 3 days into him being with the team, they made him wait because they do things the right way. You know, I mean, they don't necessarily play the best players. They play the most experienced players. So look, if they're drafting in round one, there's no guarantee this guy's going to be starting year one. They may be looking to draft or fill needs a year down the line. Mm-hmm. And it seems like, well, it doesn't seem like all the Niners corners are going to be free agents after this year. So maybe they're looking corner around one.
I wouldn't be mad at corner either. You know, you got to follow the money, right, Grant? And Charvarius Ward and D'Amino Lenore are going to be unrestricted free agents next year. Mm-hmm. Right now, I believe Charvarius Ward, off the top of my head, I believe he's due to make $14 million this year. Mm-hmm. Which is not, it's good money, but it's not number one corner money. He's going to be looking to make more, especially after the season that he had. And if he replicates it this year, I could see the Niners letting him walk and going mm-hmm. to go get their replacement for him now in the draft. I could see, outside of us going to get the best corner, I mean the best safety, I would see us drafting a corner really high, anticipating to probably keep Demo, right? He's a guy that we got later in the draft. And we developed him so we could get a hometown discount for Demo. As a matter of fact, I feel like we could give him what we've given Mooney, even at a bigger discount, and he'd be happy with it. I mean, he's coming from humble beginnings, quite frankly. Those guys are easier to deal with when you start negotiating. They're happy just to be at the table. But you could see the Niners go get Charvarius Ward's replacement early in the draft this year. If they go DB early, and obviously they have a glaring hole at free safety. I don't like what they did at linebacker. I don't, you know, it's pending on what the defensive line is going to do with the new guys that we brought in. But where there is a hole is safety. We do not have a free safety. So that's what I need. That's why I'm leaning towards safety in the draft or corner, right? Because there's a lot of – they got Isaac Yiadom. They have – Darrell Luter Jr., Samuel Womack. I mean, there's guys over there, but we don't have a lockdown outside corner because I feel like Demo has pretty much locked himself in at nickel. So it's
well, really, I'm not going to get a lockdown corner at pick 31, but I am looking at the rankings on CBS, and the guy I was mentioning a couple of weeks ago, Cooper DeJean. I don't know how to pronounce his name. From Iowa. Yeah, I mean, he's played safety. He's played corner. He's supposed to be a good hitter. He's supposed to be good against the run. He's supposed to be real instinctual in zone coverage. He has a lot of picks. He's going to drop to the end of round one because he had an injury, and he's not probably suited to play top-level man-to-man coverage, but the Niners want to play zone anyway, and he has big-time special teams experience as a gunner and as a punt returner. He'd be a pretty solid pick at the end of round one.
Where's his injury? Is it lower injury? Like, where's it?
That's a good question. I don't think it's
– can he run?
I don't think he ran.
Gotta run. You can't be a white corner. Fracture
fibula. So it's a bone.
I'm just saying, you can't be a white corner and not run. It's the biggest question of all time. You're a white corner. We got to see that 40. It is what it is. Come on, man. Like, you got to see that 40, bro.
True. It's true. I ran a 4.51 when I was 18. But it was on a track.
It was on cork?
Yeah, it was on cork. Yeah. I think on grass, I probably would have ran a 4.61, which isn't as exciting. That's but I don't tell people that.
No, like, honestly, all right, so 4.5, running a 4.5, running a 4.6 is fast.
Yeah.
That's fast.
That is fast.
Anything 4.5 and below, like 4.5 is you're one of the few people in the world that can run that fast, right? 4.4 is Olympics. Like, you could run in the Olympics if you run a 4.4, right? Well, 4.3, 4.2, that's world class speed. There's like maybe like 200 to 300 people in the world that can run that fast. I don't think people understand just how unique 4.3, 4.2 really is. Because 4.4 is moving.
Yep. Slide 23 says, does Draymond's championships justify his podcast? No.
No.
Because he hasn't been playing that well recently. So no, Fish and chips, coach. We did. We signed in a DB off a Mississippi steamer. Okay. Denial says the only thing that will offset an IU trade is an all-star caliber O-line. Anything less, I'm becoming a Green Bay fan. LOL, JK, JK. They're not trading Ayuk. I don't know. It seemed like they made it. They wanted to tell everyone, look, we got this. We got this. Okay.
Well, BA just has no leverage. That's the main issue. He doesn't have any leverage. And if the Niners really wanted to be, I don't know, mean or, you know, malicious, they could really just say, well, you know what? We're not paying you. You're playing this year. And guess what? Next year, we're going to franchise you. Yeah. And put you in at $21 million. And then, like, what are you going to do?
Yeah.
So he's not going anywhere for 2 years if the Niners don't want him to.
Agree. And it seems pretty clear that they don't want him to. So,
yeah.
That's the coach's meeting. That's the coach. I'm Grant Cohn. It's lunchtime here on the West Coast. I don't know what time zone I'm in right now. I got some serious jet lag. I'm going to eat some lunch and take a nap. All over the place. Thanks for watching, everyone. I'll see you guys when you least expect it.